The world of politics is not pretty, even in high school. That's one of the takeaways from the new documentary Boys State, about a week-long program sponsored by the American Legion. In it, 1,000 Texas high school boys form political parties, nominate candidates, and hold elections to form a government.
The film shows how a few of these students think about politics and running for office, and it considers how they've been influenced by the last few years of American political discourse. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're talking about the fascinating, unsettling Apple TV Plus film Boys State on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me and Stephen from his home studio bunker is Glenn Weldon of NPR's Arts Desk. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And with us again is longtime NPR contributor and culture writer Bilal Qureshi. Hello, Bilal.
Hi, Linda, and hi, everyone.
Hello. So for people who are not familiar with Boys State, so this documentary follows the 2018 Texas Boys State. There are different Boys State incarnations all around the country. This documentary screened at the Sundance Film Festival, which was, you know, one of the last things that happened in entertainment before everything sort of collapsed. But it won the Grand Jury Prize in the U.S. documentary competition. It was then acquired at Sundance by A24 and Apple TV Plus. It's directed by Jesse Moss and Amanda McBain. They also worked on The Overnighters, which was a shortlisted documentary feature for the Oscars. So the first thing that I want to talk about, they start this film by saying, here's a bunch of the people who have done Boys State, including Bill Clinton, Dick Cheney, Cory Booker, Michael Jordan, Neil Armstrong, Rush Limbaugh. It's a really interesting mix, including not in Texas, but elsewhere in the country. Bilal Qureshi, is that correct?
Yeah, no, that was my one of my high school memories I have. But yeah, it was in Virginia. It was run by the American Legion, of course, as well, but had a weird twist where Jerry Falwell was actually the kind of head of our Boys State. So we were at Liberty University. It was Virginia in the late 90s, feeling quite different to Virginia today. But yes, I am a, I guess, proud Boys State alum.
Yeah, Stephen, did I hear that you were involved in Boys State or no?
So I was the runner-up to become Badger Boy, which is what we called Boys State in Wisconsin. I never entirely understood what Badger Boy was. Mm. I ended up, instead of going to Badger Boy, I went to where the runner-ups went, which was this thing called World Leadership Conference, which was an incredibly formative and important and wonderful experience for me, but it was a lot more like Model UN and a lot less like boot camp for wayward power seekers. So they made the right choice.
I hear you. Glenn, you were not part of Boys State, but how did,
no way.
How did this documentary strike you?
I honestly don't know. I hope to have a better sense of how I feel about this film when we finish this conversation today. But I do know this. As this was playing, I kept looking around my house and sort of gripping my couch cushions to remind myself that I was here. And I was not there. I can't imagine being there. I'd never want to go there. I never want to have been there. I'm going to have nightmares after this film about being there. Look, early on, one of the kids asks what it is that they do there.
Question. We're running for offices and we're running for all these different things, right? But what is it that we're doing after we get elected?
Texas Boys State focuses more on the process leading up to the election.
Okay, so what that means is, in effect, these kids have to decide what office they want to run for before they decide what they believe in. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, this is meant to inspire participatory citizenship and to create the leaders of tomorrow today. But as it works here in this film and this particular year, it works essentially as a cynicism factory, a tribalism factory, a nihilism factory. And maybe at some point it shows kids how the system works. But in this instance, it just showed, you know, 1,000+ kids how to game the system. Now, I've read a lot of reviews and think pieces that this film has inspired, and the most basic, the most surface, the most ice-cold take I keep reading is, well, that's just the way America is. It's just a shell game, cult of personality, no difference between the parties. And maybe that's true, but it's not interesting. Look, there's this kid, Rob, really charismatic kid. He will be played by Blake Jenner in the inevitable Richard Linklater film that follows.
It's true.
And he came to a realization at Boys State.
But getting here certainly gave me a new appreciation for why politicians lie to get into office.
Okay, shut it down. That's what I came away with after hearing that. It's like, look, I don't have articulate feelings about this because it angered up the blood But I'm curious to hear especially what Bilal has to say about this thing, because I don't know, man.
And let's just set up just a tiny bit more before we do that. You're essentially following four kids, right? And these parties are named completely randomly. So these party names mean nothing. They're named by Boys State. Stephen Garza is running for governor, which is the top office, on the nationalist ticket. There is a kid named Eddie who's running for governor on the Federalist ticket. Then you're also following Renee, who is the top political guy for the Nationalist Party, and Ben, who is the top political guy for the Federalist Party. And then also Rob, who kind of is an additional nationalist who's a little more prominent at the beginning than at the end. And you're sort of following these two campaigns as they go around and they kind of glad hand with all the other boys. Bilal, I think a lot of people have found this to be a challenging watch just because a lot of these kids, like Rob in that clip, do say a lot of like cynical sounding things about politics and how politics works. How did this strike you? What did you think of this film?
Well, I have to say, when you said unsettling and also to hear what Glenn, you said, I completely understand it. I'm realizing I had none of that reaction to this film. It wasn't just that I was feeling nostalgic for my own Boys State, you know, week, because that was not the most pleasant experience always. But I saw this in a public screening, actually, Linda, after Sundance. It was at the True False Film Festival, which is a documentary film festival. It was a big public screening in Missouri. And everybody in that audience just really responded to it. And it was such a positive and kind of a very communal to see something in which ultimately I don't want to give anything about the film away, but there are like also not cynical characters in it. There are people in this film who also are very revealing about the way our politics can also possibly change and could also possibly outgrow some of the worst tendencies. And so I think I actually did not feel unsettled by it. I felt it was one way to potentially get people to think about their role in the country. Yeah, it's terrible because it also has all the terrible things about being a 16-year-old going on too, which is that you're actually like a terrible person to some people and you will be, and there's cliquishness and there's judginess and there's all the same stuff that happens otherwise. So the popular guy versus the unpopular guy. Anyway, so I didn't find it unsettling. I actually found it such a brilliantly made film and such a brilliantly edited film. And I found it ultimately quite inspiring, but I feel very maybe in the margins of that view.
Stephen, what'd you think?
I agree with everything Bilal just said. I think this is a superb piece of filmmaking. I think it is a much heavier lift as a piece of filmmaking than it looks like. And I think it's really important to note that not only is not every kid deeply cynical, and not only does like not every kid approach this the same way, I think it's really important. Bilal made that great point about you're watching 16-year-olds and 16-year-olds are horrible. You're also watching exclusively 16-year-old boys. And I think if I have one complaint about this movie is I just immediately want to see the sequel that is set at Texas Girls State that was happening simultaneously. These programs are segregated by gender and the schools send one of each to each. And I would be fascinated to see how Girls State plays out differently, how much this kind of tortured young masculinity is coming into play in these conversations. I agree with Glenn in that, like, I deeply and desperately did not want to be there. I watched this entire film thinking, thank God they sent me to the World Leadership Conference, which was co-ed and which was much more expansive in the number of ideas being discussed and the number of perspectives being represented. And it's capturing all these like young minds, all these kids. And what's interesting about it isn't just their politics, but what they think politics are. This for me is right up there with my favorite documentaries, movies like A Perfect Candidate, which, speaking of Virginia politics in the 90s, Bilal, yes, it's curdled and yes, it can be dispiriting. And yes, it comes to some scary conclusions, but it is also just a fascinating look at how good intentions and bad intentions, good faith and bad faith all swirl together in this really complicated way. I loved this movie.
Yeah, let me try to sort of speak a little bit to why I did find it unsettling at times. So let's play a clip from one of the early speeches from one of the kids who's grasping for power.
I believe our society is stronger when everybody is disciplined, yet dangerous. Our masculinity shall not be infringed. If you want the big guns, vote for the Barrett. Thank you.
So here's what I take away from that clip. There's this sense of, like, to me, deeply genuine anger that feels real to me. Mm-hmm. And yet also there's a little bit of like jokiness of like vote for the Barrett. There's a whole undercurrent in this that is kidding, but not kidding, right? They're all sort of like playing around, but they're not playing around. And one of the reasons why they followed Boys State in 2018 when they did was that it had been in the news the previous year for the fact that the Boys State body that year voted to have Texas secede. So they had been in the news. And it has that feeling of like, wouldn't it be funny if we voted to secede? And some of it does feel funny, right? But some of it does not feel funny to me. And I want to play a clip. We talked a little bit about Ben, who is the political operative for one of the campaigns, who gives a speech a little bit later in the film when he's starting to kind of formulate his political approach.
I'm state party chairman. My job is to get federalists in office. My job is to beat the other party.
We want to drive the narrative home that the nationalists have really bad, corrupt leadership. We're going to do shock and awe. It's going to be awesome.
I know how to play hard and aggressive when I need to, and I know when to make enemies and when to make friends.
You know, it's politics. You play to win.
Now, do I believe that that absolutely represents completely what, you know, that kid's political views will be or operative political strategy will be as an adult? Not necessarily. Do I think there's some hard line where he's going to completely abandon this idea of shock and awe and you portray your opponent as being totally corrupt? I don't know. Maybe there's something about the underlying anger mixed with jokery that I find unnerving.
Yeah. I am coming around to the fact that this is a very well-made film because of what they select to show us and what they select not to. But look at what they select to show us. The way it's supposed to work, and maybe it never worked this way in real life, but this was the idea. You hold personal and societal ideals. You look around for a party that sort of agrees with at least some of them. Then if you're in the leadership of that party, you work to transform those ideals into policy. But that's one track. The other track is that because before you can do that, you have to sell to people. So you transform those ideals into rhetoric, which then, given our current media landscape, gets distilled into talking points, sound bites. And what we see happening in this film again and again, and in speeches like that one you just quoted there, is that this lengthy deliberative process that proceeds from a place of good faith works in exactly the opposite direction. Because these kids are spouting these pre-digested bits of, I was going to say received wisdom, received sloganeering that they profess because in this particular instance, they know this cohort so well. These kids are so homogenous in this Texas group that their two-party system is basically a distinction without a difference. It's Sneetches versus Starbellied Sneetches. And
but that's also because they're randomly assigned to parties.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. So what they're learning is nothing but cynicism. What they're learning is nothing but having a point of view that is shaped by what you know is popular. It's, I don't know, again, I think it's well captured, but ooh, boy, it's frustrating.
I just find that we do treat politics like a sport in this country, don't we? I mean, to some extent, I do agree with that. We have a very tribal attitude toward politics. And certainly when I saw it in March, I thought, how is this film going to land in the summer of 2020 when it's released, and how are there going to be screenings of it and in schools? And obviously there aren't because of what's happened. But I mean, I thought about how it lands also now because these kids are also very tuned into our current political moment there. We have a Latino kid who's at the center of the story who comes from an immigrant family in Texas. You have a kind of old white guard that runs, you know, Boys State historically and also that is there. So there's also other kinds of cultural, I think, elements in the country that are reflected in this. I found it made me just really think about how early politics enter your life in this country and how early you are politicized wherever you grow up and in the family that you grow up in and how these kids are bringing, because there are some interesting interviews with them before they get to Boys State. And I actually found some of the most interesting because their ideas about politics, including Ben's, these are ideas that they're bringing from home to Boys State with them. And I think as a viewer, you get to watch that. And I feel it makes me realize that, especially now that politics is everywhere, it's in every social media feed, it's in every part of our culture, every show is politicized. I feel that this must be an incredibly representative generation of our larger political divisions.
Yeah, and I don't want to get out of this without playing you one clip of Renee Otero, who is the, according to what I read in the notes, they went out and scouted for these kids before Boys State started, which ones might be interesting to follow. Renee is the one they discovered at the event, and it's because he gave this very, very stirring speech, and I do want you to hear a little bit of that.
I lobbied I went to state council meetings just so a man in prison can have his rights. So can you just imagine what I'm capable of for every single one of us out here who is free and out of chains and are a nationalist?
And so if you are inclined, I think, to look for the sort of more upside of some of these kids are not strictly going at it from a cynical perspective. That kid is talking about real activism that he did in his real life on behalf of an incarcerated man. And the other kids who are there respond to it, even though he's maybe not as politically aligned with them. So I do think there is a mix of sort of the things that feel heartening and the things that feel kind of nervous making for me.
I mean, this movie is a Rorschach test in a lot of ways. I think I maybe tapped more into people like Renee, who I just saw this kind of ball of slightly unformed 16, 17 year old charisma and intelligence and quickness. These kids are going to grow up and some of them are going to get better and some of them are going to get worse and some of them are going to get more polished and some of them are going to be exactly what they are at 16 or 17. I just found there was such a broad range of outcomes across these kids. I found it fascinating. I will probably watch this movie again and just glean different things from it. Just watching this movie through the lens of how it portrays gender. Watch this movie through the lens of how it portrays race. Watch this movie through the lens of how it covers the Bernie Sanders movement. You can just watch this movie through different lenses and draw different things from it.
To me, the hope I drew from it was that I wish that a kid like Steven or someone like Renee had been at my edition of Boys State that I went to, because I really felt that the kids and their reactions to these particular candidates weren't what you imagine. Like, there were people who ended up getting behind Renee. There were people who ended up supporting, you know, Steven's sort of narrative and his story and his family's immigrant history. And I think that, you know, if Boys State also begins to be more representative of the country, which I don't remember it being at all, that there is potentially hope, you know, for more kinds of voices and different kinds of political stars, because that made me wonder whether I could go back and imagine a different Boys State and would have, and that would have been different, because I certainly won no office and ran for no office because I did not think there was any place for me on Jerry Falwell's stages, I have to just say. And there wasn't, to be honest with you. What can you do?
Yeah. Well, one of my takeaways is that if you are not terribly familiar with Boys State, this might strike you one way. And if you are comparing it to Virginia Boys State of a few years ago on the campus of Liberty University, I'm serious. That's what I'm taking away from this, is that Bilal compares it to his Boys State experience and therefore sees a different kind of relative picture than maybe I do as somebody who didn't know a lot about what went on at Boys State. Anyway, it is on Apple TV Plus. It is a really fascinating movie. Tell us what you think. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or on Twitter at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week. So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the Glenlivet's new Caribbean Reserve Expression, a new single malt with a bold tropical twist that is selectively finished in barrels that previously held Caribbean rum, offering a sweet and smooth taste. Learn more at theglenlivet.com. The Glenlivet Caribbean Reserve Single Malt Scotch Whiskey. Enjoy our quality responsibly. 40% alcohol by volume, 80 proof. 2020 imported by the Glenlivet Distilling Company, New York, New York.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week. Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
Well, a couple weeks ago, we announced the winner of our sixth annual Tiny Desk Contest. NPR Music does this every year. The grand prize is that the winner gets to come into the NPR office and perform a Tiny Desk concert. Well, as you can imagine, this is a year unlike any other year. It is a prize deferred, but we are really, really excited about Linda Diaz, who won this year's award. Linda Diaz, to me, has star power written all over her. The song that she won for is called Green Tea Ice Cream, and it is this dreamy, swoony piece of kind of late summery R&B with these gorgeous harmonies. Let's hear a little bit of it. When I'm by the sea, sweatshirt, sweatpants, white noise, blue jeans, writing letters to old friends, raccoons, and tender moments.
So good to me.
When she finally does get to come in, I cannot wait to see this performed at the desk. In the meantime, she's going to be performing a Tiny Desk home concert, which we'll be promoting on the NPR Music website. And we're going to kind of have her touring the country virtually, I guess. She's actually not new to the Tiny Desk. She performed as a backup singer at a show last year. But as a solo artist with this wonderful group behind her, she's just remarkable. I'm so excited for people to hear her. Linda Diaz, winner of the 2020 Tiny Desk contest.
Oh, thank you very much. And from one Linda to another, congratulations. Woo. All right. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week, sir?
Lisa Hanawalt is a cartoonist who designed the look of the show BoJack Horseman, and she created the series Tuca and Bertie. And if you know her just from those shows, you've got a pretty solid, but I would say incomplete grasp on her aesthetic. You know, it's very bright, loud, colorful. So she's got a lot of anthropomorphic animals doing mundane things, squabbling with roommates, working with their day jobs. So her deal is the absurd and the everyday smashed together. She's got a new book, which is actually an old book. It's called I Want You, an anthology of a mini comic series she started doing back in 2009. And in those pages, you can really see the sensibility that we now recognize coalescing. It's a very weird book. It's a very horny book. It's sometimes grotesque. It's always funny. And it's chronicling her youthful obsessions. Bodily fluids, animals in hats, horrifying sandwiches, lots and lots of horses. So, you know, this club has everything. It's very fun. It's not going to be for everyone. She's written a new introduction where she, or at least a bird person version of herself, kind of looks back on the artist she was, the person she was, the art she produced back in 2009. And it's probably my favorite part of the book because it strikes exactly the right tone. It's very generous toward her younger self, but also very clear-eyed in a real way. So that is I Want You by Lisa Hanawalt.
Oh, thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Bilal Qureshi, what is making you happy this week?
I've been visiting my dad in Virginia this week, and when I sink into the couch there, I sometimes turn to my favorite comfort show, which is House Hunters International, which I really enjoy watching. But I also just like it at the level of like thinking about traveling and what if you could move somewhere else. And this week I ended up watching 90 Day Fiancé the other way. It is quite an interesting show because it's not really the apartment that people are looking for, but they are moving to other countries. This is Americans moving to Ethiopia, Korea, India in search of love. Now, I have to say I'm not at all familiar with the 90 Day series. I did really find this in one of my sort of searches for something not super brain demanding, but I have found it to be one of the most interesting shows about American expats and potentially American attitudes about elsewhere. It's sort of slow and these stories go on and it's quite indulgent, I think. But I have to say that these are some of the people I've really found myself thinking, how did you get there? And how do you plan to live in Addis this way? But it is a really interesting show. And I find it the thing that has made me, I guess, happy and entertained and also think this week.
And it's called 90 Day Fiancé.
The Other Way. This is The Other Way, where the Americans are moving abroad to be with their international fiancés.
Gotcha.
I think it's on TLC. But it's on demand at my dad's house. Yeah.
All right. 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way. Thank you very much, Bilal Qureshi. Making me happy this week, I'm going to do two happies with one stone in that what is making me happy this week is affable comedians doing podcasts. And recently I've been getting into both Make My Day with Josh Gondelman and Working It Out with Mike Birbiglia, which are both really warm, lovely comedians talking to other comedians. Josh runs a game show with one contestant, which I think is very funny. As we tape this, the new show is John Hodgman is his one contestant. So the contestant always wins because there's only one contestant, which is the most Josh Gondelman thing ever, if you know his kind of positive, upbeat brand of comedy. So that's very, very affable. Birbiglia's show, Working It Out, is more specifically about comedians developing comedy material. The first episode, he gets a really hard edit on a piece of comedy he's working on from Ira Glass, which is a really interesting thing to listen to because you can tell Ira Glass is A, brutal, and B, used to getting his way because he just kind of says, just take this out and put this in instead. It's super interesting. So I'm going to say affable comedians doing podcasts, Make My Day with Josh Gondelman and Working It Out with Mike Birbiglia. Those are what is making me happy this week. And we have one more thing before we go. We are going to be covering Avatar, The Last Airbender, and The Legend of Korra in two separate upcoming episodes. We want your questions about each series that you would like us to explore. If you have a question, you can email us a voice memo at pchh@npr.org. Send us a voice memo, pchh@npr.org. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can find Glenn at G.H. Weldon and Bilal at B-Q-I-L-A-L. You can find our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. So thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, subscribe to our newsletter. It's over at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here next week when we will be talking about the new HBO series Lovecraft Country.
Hey y'all, I'm Sam Sanders, host of It's Been a Minute. On my show, we catch you up on all the things in news and culture.
The Space Force? I totally missed this. What is the Space Force?
Stop it. Stacey, you don't know about the Space Force?
No.
What?
I've been in my apartment for 4 months.
Oh, man.
Crushing it, Stacey. Thank you. Feeling good.
News without the despair. Listen now to the It's Been a Minute podcast from NPR.